Welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. And today we are talking Puerto Rico. Consider this. Puerto Ricans are leaving the island in droves, numbers not seen since right after World War II and the Great Migration. There's been a decade-long recession there. The island is $73 billion in debt. 40% of Puerto Ricans live in poverty, and the island is essentially paying for its basic services, things like teachers, roads, trash collection, maintaining prisons, anything and everything is being paid for essentially on credit using investor-friendly, tax-free bonds. And this U.S. territory is essentially in a crisis. They are closing schools. They're laying off public sector employees, healthcare, transportation. Just about everything is on the verge of shutting down. It may or may not at some point have the option of bankruptcy. So Puerto Rico is in trouble. But consider this. You can go to a new mall and buy Gucci, just a few blocks away from the beach. You can buy a three-bedroom home for under $100,000. So investors in this environment are moving in effect, to take advantage of the fiscal crisis. Maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe that's just what the island needs. That's certainly the argument that some politicians are making. But today we're going to talk about those things and about the root causes of Puerto Rico's debt crisis. What role has Wall Street had? What role does Washington play? And how does what's happening in Puerto Rico affect possibly your own bottom line? You might be interested to know that your mutual fund portfolio might very well contain Puerto Rican debt bonds. So let's get started. Joining me today to discuss the Puerto Rico debt crisis and the far-reaching implications are Ed Morales. Ed is an author and journalist who's written for The Nation, The New York Times, The LA Times, Rolling Stone, and The Guardian, and many more. He's now lecturing at Columbia University's Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race, and he's joining us from Argo Studios in New York. Hi, Ed.
Hi. How's it going out there?
Great. Thanks for being here. You're going to be able to shed a lot of light on this subject, and really glad to have you here. Also joining us is David Dayan. David is a freelance reporter for various publications. He's written about the debt crisis for the American Prospect. His first book, Chain of Title, How Three Ordinary Americans Uncovered Wall Street's Great Foreclosure Fraud, releases in May. And David is joining us from Los Angeles. Hi, David. Welcome back.
Hi. Thanks for having me on again.
Thank you. Well, let's start with a little bit of context, because Puerto Rico is, it's a territory of the United States, and as such, the U.S. Congress has input and in some ways has no autonomy at all. It's a very unusual arrangement, and if, Ed, you could start us off with just a brief history of how we came to be in the debt crisis that we see in Puerto Rico and the role that the territory's relationship with the U.S. had to play in this matter.
Sure. Well, you know, as you know, Puerto Rico was part of the prize that the U.S. got from the war with Spain in 1898. And at first it was governed by a series of U.S.-appointed military governors, and they tried to institute English language education and things like that. But there were a lot of nationalist movements. And then we can move forward to mid-century, where, you know, 35 years after all Puerto Ricans were granted U.S. citizenship in 1917, they finally made concessions to the nationalist movement and allowed Puerto Ricans to elect governors who were actually Puerto Rican. And then at the same time, they instituted this economic program called Operation Bootstrap, which it was designed to create an industrial economy in Puerto Rico. Which, you know, the agricultural economy had been really dominated by large U.S. landowners and also collaborators who were from Puerto Rico. So this Operation Bootstrap involved a similar thing that's going on now, a great migration to the United States, where a lot of landless peasants and poorly educated Puerto Ricans, who constitute the majority of Puerto Rican migrants, came to places like New York and Boston and Philadelphia and Cleveland. And at the same time, small industrial economy was created that allowed for the creation of a small middle class, which had its biggest flowering in the period of between the 50s and the early 70s. And this is very similar to what goes on. You know, one of the things that happened with this Operation Bootstrap is that it's very similar as a dry run for NAFTA kind of policies, where basically was a wealth extraction model that allowed U.S. corporations to go down there and set up shop.
And this isn't
with low taxation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first time that Puerto Rico, the current crisis, that is, isn't the first time that Puerto Rico has had to turn to private investment in the United States and Wall Street for help, right? Because for decades, the island has been borrowing money, right, to pay its bills.
Yeah, it's basically because the Operation Bootstrap failed to create capital accumulation for Puerto Rico. When the oil crisis hit in the 70s, that's when they instituted this thing called Section 936 in the IRS tax code, which allowed U.S. corporations to go virtually untaxed. But even then, they were borrowing to cover expenses for the government. But this became really exacerbated in 1996, I believe, when the Clinton administration eliminated Section 936 and gave it a 10-year grace period for its total elimination. And what that did was the private sector really was not creating jobs for Puerto Ricans at all. So basically, the government became the largest employer. And there was very little economic growth going on. Actually, you know, economic growth was never part of the plan in Puerto Rico.
So is that one of the reasons, David, let's ask you, is that one of the reasons that the debt increased so rapidly every year after, let's say, the year 2000?
Yeah, there were two reasons. One, the debt increased because of the economic recession, really depression, that's been going on in Puerto Rico for the last close to a decade. And the second reason is that the Puerto Rican government, successive governments, issued massive amounts of debt bonds through various vehicles. I think there are 17 different vehicles in which this debt was issued. And it was issued because it's very attractive to U.S. financial institutions to acquire this municipal debt. And the reason is that it's very unusual in that it is what is known as triple tax exempt. It is exempt from state, local, and federal taxes, which means that these bonds pay out much higher than a debt issuance that does require some level of taxation.
And that's why that product was so attractive.
Financial institutions were actually encouraging Puerto Rico to continue to paper over their economic problems by issuing debt. And that's really how this spiraled and got into a situation where they're now, I believe, $73 billion in debt.
Mm-hmm. And those so-called the tax-free triple tax-exempt bonds, that's what made them so attractive to mutual funds that so many of us might find in our portfolios, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Franklin Templeton and Oppenheimer, some of the biggest mutual funds that created their own various vehicles for selling Puerto Rican municipal debt. One of the funds, I believe it's, I'm not sure if it's Oppenheimer or Franklin Templeton, but the name of the fund is the Opportunistic Distressed Fund. It actually labels Puerto Rico as a, you know, a country in distress, and that they're taking that opportunity to extract a fairly large payday on the debt.
How forthright.
Yeah.
Talk about calling it what it is. And I'm sure there's some folks who probably understand that there is a humanitarian component to the suffering that's caused by this kind of situation. When you have 40% of the island living in poverty and people are flooding off the island, there's a humanitarian element. But I think it really hits home when you realize, and it might be possible, that my life savings could take a bit of a hit if I'm invested in some way in and what's happening there. So what questions might our callers have? Let's invite them in at some point. What questions do you have about the Puerto Rico debt crisis? Do you have a bond fund that might be invested? Please give us a call. Are you from Puerto Rico? Do you have family there? What is the situation on the ground there? And who do you think, how do you think Congress should get involved? We invite you to give us a call. The number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Better yet, just post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. So let's talk about where we are today. There was a sudden infusion of cash when there was an opportunity seen with maybe one of these opportunistic portfolio funds. And suddenly, there's Gucci, there are hotels that are being upgraded, although because of problems with the infrastructure, they are losing power from time to time. But suddenly there are luxury hotel suites available and luxury homes available. Ed, just talk a bit about that infusion, where it's coming from, and what's going to happen in the short term.
Yeah, well, what happened was during the administration of Governor Fortunio, who was the previous governor before Garcia Padilla, who happens to belong to the statehood party that Fortunio does, pro-statehood party, and also has very close ties to the right Republicans in the United States, although not as right as Trump is. Mm-hmm. This is not the liberal Republicans. Mm-hmm. He passed a law that really encouraged a lot of multimillionaires and billionaires to move to Puerto Rico by giving them huge tax breaks. And that's why you have a lot of investors like Paulson, who bought up all these huge hotels along this strip near the Condado, which is one of the tourist strips in San Juan. And they also built this mall that you refer to. Yeah, I haven't been there yet. I went to go last time. It's very fancy. And so they've created this idea of Puerto Rico as being a tax haven for the super rich, and in the hopes that the super rich, and Garcia Padilla has continued this policy, and they have these conventions every year. There was one, I think, about a month ago where they invited all these people to come and invest, and Rudy Giuliani was actually a speaker in the one in 2014. So they want to create this sort of atmosphere for multimillionaires or billionaires to come and live tax-free or very low tax rates. And so they're creating a situation where it's Puerto Rico is trying to become attractive to very rich people, and at the same time there's growing inequality on the island, as you say, and services are really falling apart, infrastructure is falling apart, and the masses of the people, if they can afford it, they leave the island, as you said, at high rates.
And given its status as a territory, the U.S. Congress has a great deal to say about this. And maybe or maybe not, it's interesting that there has been a great deal of contribution by hedge funds regarding what's to happen next in Puerto Rico to various campaigns. What do you make of that? I'm just wondering how Congress might react, given that they have something to say about next steps there. David?
Well, Congress ought to react. There have been some guarantees made by the Republican majority in the House that there will be a bill to deal with Puerto Rico in some way by the end of March. There's been a number of hearings, and we'll see what transpires. But you're right in targeting the fact that there have been these very large contributions from hedge fund managers who also happen to be heavily invested in Puerto Rican debt into the presidential candidates, most notably Marco Rubio, who changed his position on whether or not to give municipalities in Puerto Rico the ability to access bankruptcy protection after he received large donations from people like Paul Singer, who is a large hedge fund manager, and others. So this is obviously, part of the play for these hedge funds, which some call vulture funds, who buy up debt in distress companies, usually at very discounted rates. And even if they end up getting paid off not totally in full, they make a very large payday because they bought it up at a discount. And that's one of the ways that we're seeing this happen. A group of hedge funds put out a report several months ago that said that the way that Puerto Rico can move forward is if they pay off their debts, but they go ahead and make massive cuts to schools. And in fact, that's already happening. They've closed 100 schools in Puerto Rico. So, this is a pretty distressing situation, especially because the law is not really on the side of Puerto Rico. The obligation, general obligation bonds that have been issued have a privilege of place in the Constitution such that they need to be paid off by constitutional law of the Commonwealth. And right. So it makes it very hard to get out of that, and the fact that they can't access bankruptcy protections that every state or municipality, I should say, in the United States could, it makes it very hard for them to have any leverage in negotiations.
Well, certainly leverage is being exerted on Congress. As you said, I just received an email from Sarah Santiago in Puerto Rico. She says, these are the things that the U.S. Congress has never planned, and it is entirely their responsibility. That is my protest against Washington. So obviously a lot of people on the island, in fact, I had dinner last night with a friend from the island who says, you know, this was predictable. You could see it coming from a mile away.
Absolutely. The $73 billion in debt didn't build up overnight. One thing that you're going to start to see is Congress, if they're not interested now, they may be interested later because of this mass out-migration from Puerto Rico to the United States. These are U.S. citizens. All you have to do is get signed up to vote, and you're good to go. In places like Florida, which is a swing state, and other parts of the country where there's been a lot of migration from Puerto Rico, they're going to start to become a factor in the election cycle. And here we are in 2016. It's going to be a close presidential race. There are a lot of close races. There's a Senate race that's an open seat in Florida. And this issue is not going to go away. And those expats, the diaspora from Puerto Rico, is going to have long memories around who was there wanting to help them and who wasn't.
Let's go to a phone call. We've got Bruce in Piedmont. Hi, Bruce. Welcome.
Hi. I have a two-part question. First, you're speaking about the humanitarian impact. Do your callers think that Puerto Rico could have raised enough money, borrowed enough money, if they hadn't offered tax-free bonds? And secondly, and more importantly, what do your callers think are the best way that Puerto Rico can get economically more self-sufficient and get out of its debt?
Ed, you want to take that one?
Sure. The first part of the question, I think you're right that the bonds would not have been as sellable if it weren't for the triple tax and exemption. And one of the big problems with a lot of the current crisis is that in 2014 there was a huge bond sale after Puerto Rico was already had its credit rating vastly devalued, and that's where a lot of vulture funds came in. You know, a lot of the original investors, a lot of them were mom and pop investors, people with pension funds, and those people still own a lot of the debt. But the vultures swept in, knowing that that's what they do. They go into distressed economies as they've done in Greece and Argentina, and they look for that payoff. What people are discussing now, there are people who are economic advisors, the people in the legislation in legislature in Puerto Rico and people in government, are that if the U.S. agrees to grant some form of bankruptcy or debt restructuring, that there really has to be a priority about how to create an economy that actually creates wealth, and some of the money stays in Puerto Rico. You know, I've talked to lawyers in Puerto Rico that say that Walmart has, they drive trucks, vans filled with cash to the airport every night to, you know, to get it out. And there has to be some way to assure long-term economic development in Puerto Rico, because that's never been the priority.
Okay. Let's talk to Denny in Richmond. You know, in addition to the financial implications, there are human implications to what's happening with the financial crisis. Denny, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I just returned, actually, from my first visit to Puerto Rico. I'm working with environmental justice communities dealing with legacy pollution from factories that were built, like the Corco refinery down by Ponce, built, you know, 40, 50 years ago, which closed down, kind of a big boondoggle type thing. And these legacy pollution issues are haunting people. The environmental agencies don't have the resources because of the debt issue to even monitor the air. So working with the sewer group in Ponce, we're actually training the residents to take their own air tests to show how badly they're being exposed, to try to get, in this case, probably the neighborhood will have to get relocated out of there. But daily, you know, you can expect that the taps might not work, the water might not be there for days at a time, the power goes out, as somebody mentions. And, yeah, I mean, it's a long-running disaster that has human health consequences, both just from the daily needs that you need, water and power, down to these communities that have toxic pollution invading their homes literally every day.
And there's no oversight because of lack of money as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the region of EPA that oversees Puerto Rico is Region 2 based in New York. I'm not sure what the history of that is. But Region 2 has been very helpful. They actually made the grant so the citizens could, you know, do the testing and do the toxic mapping and everything. But at the end of the day, you know, tests and maps and stuff are all good to make the case, but all you have to do is roll down your window and look out with your own two eyes to know that there's a toxic problem there that needs to be dealt with. So we're getting some help, but it's just, it's not enough, you know, and until Congress take some action to deal with all of these issues, those folks are stuck.
Okay, thanks, Denny. And I'm sure it probably sounds off subject, but David, now comes Zika, yes, in the midst of this situation.
Yeah, this is really a terrifying part of this crisis to me. The CDC just this week came out and said that they estimate that 1 in 5 Puerto Ricans could contract the Zika virus over the next several months. And you are, this is kind of the worst place on earth to have a public health outbreak, because the public health infrastructure has been downgraded so tremendously. I talked to someone over who goes back and forth to the island, who told me that a doctor a day leaves the island, that people wait in emergency rooms for up to 12 hours just to see a public health professional. There's simply a lower amount of ability to deal with normal health problems on the island, let alone something like Zika, which is unpredictable and still not fully understood. So I know that the Obama administration, as part of their overall Zika appropriation that they want to get, $1.7 billion, part of that goes to Puerto Rico and to help community health centers and various other parts of the health infrastructure try to monitor and diagnose and deal with the virus. But if that doesn't come through, there just isn't the infrastructure right now on the island to try to manage a public health outbreak.
It's extraordinary timing. So glad that we have this kind of insight at this particular time, because it looks like Puerto Rico might be on the precipice. So I'm looking forward to hearing the second half of the show and what you have to say about Puerto Rico and how. What are your thoughts about Puerto Rico? We hope you'll give us a call. This is Your Call, and we're going to be right back.
There are many ways you can take part in today's conversation on Your Call. On the phone, by sending an email to feedback at yourcallradio.org, or by going to yourcallradio.org, the website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone, call us toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Coming up in a half an hour at 11 o'clock here on KLW, it's the BBC program World Have Your Say.
Welcome back. Today we're talking with journalists Ed Morales and David Dayan. Both of them have extensively covered Puerto Rico and the debt crisis, and now it appears that there is a quickening. Things are rapidly coming to a conclusion of some kind. Will they be allowed to declare bankruptcy? Will it become a situation like Greece, in which a country or an area, a territory, has to decide to pay its debt? Pay its investors, basically, or maintain services. And we're hoping that you'll give us a call. Do you have family in Puerto Rico? Have you had extensive travel there? Have you seen changes? Give us a call, 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK, or you can drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you could post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. Let's talk about the comparisons, if you would, Ed, to what happened in Greece. Literally, we kind of saw a similar situation play out where Greece had borrowed money when it came time to pay back the investments and the country couldn't afford it. They began austerity measures and literally cut back pensions, laid off thousands, if not millions, and suddenly it became investors versus people who are just trying to live. So is there a comparison there?
Well, yeah, there's a comparison. But, you know, what's different is that Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory of the U.S., and so there are things that might happen that could allow Puerto Rico to restructure its debt. The other thing is that the banks in Puerto Rico are protected by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which means that there can't be a bank panic, whereas the Greek banks were tied directly to the government, and any crisis in government funds or, you know, directly rub off on the bank situation. So I have to reassure my mom when she calls me, who lives there, you know, about whether there's going to be a bank panic. And I say, no, you're protected by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is a legacy of the New Deal, of course.
Well, because it is. I'm sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, the thing is that there's going to be a Supreme Court hearing coming up, I think, this month, in which they're actually going to be considering this case about double jeopardy, whether you can be tried twice in Puerto Rico, and it has to do with the autonomy that many people in the Puerto Rican Commonwealth Party believe was granted to Puerto Rico, that you know, gave it a sort of a pseudo-nation status. And so if it's decided that there is no autonomy and Puerto Rico is an they reinforce this idea that Puerto Rico is an unincorporated territory of the U.S., then it becomes more difficult for the U.S. to absolve itself from responsibility for the crisis. So that might be an interesting ruling to look for, and it's interesting because Sonia Sotomayor is one of the judges, and she's from a Puerto Rican background, so she's going to have to work really hard to, look at the law closely and allow her background to affect her thinking.
And it might be a test for other states, yeah, such as Illinois, which also has an unsustainable debt.
Right.
And how do they permit Puerto Rico to proceed? I think a lot of states might be looking in that direction, yes?
Well, Detroit, just went through a bankruptcy. I know that Detroit is not a state, but yes, the states will be looking at that for sure.
Okay, we're looking to hear from anyone who has insights on this, whether as an investor, an observer, a former resident, you have family there. Give us a call. On the phone now, we have GS from San Leandro. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Very good. I wish I'd had time to go through and determine the exact process by which a new state may be incorporated into this country. It's obviously happened many times. My question is, why doesn't Congress, if that's the mechanism, just begin the process of making Puerto Rico a full-blown state, just a regular, ordinary, regular state of the United States? That's my question.
Ed, you want to talk about that?
Well, Congress, in its current composition, probably wouldn't favor Puerto Rico to be incorporated as a state because it would involve huge new expenditures. And, you know, we've been in this climate of reducing expenditures, and many people in Puerto Rico depend on, public programs and AFDC and things like that. But the other thing is that Puerto Rican people have a role in it as well, and Puerto Rico needs to generate a process to vote whether, you know, what they want to do. The last vote was held a few years ago, which dismissed or was not in favor of the current territorial status. However, a lot of people have accused the Statehood Party of having manipulated that vote to create a pro-statehood vote. So even though the Statehood Party says that they won the vote, many members of the Commonwealth Party did not fill out their ballots in protest because they felt the Statehood Party manipulated the process for the plebiscite election, is called. So it's kind of a confusing situation. Many people feel that even if Puerto Ricans voted in favor of statehood, that the current climate in Congress, which is dominated by Republicans, would not favor the admission of Puerto Rico as a state, and Congress has the final say in that matter.
Okay. Thanks for your call. And I'm wondering, too, if there, given the current circumstances, is the island being nudged in the direction of privatizing its assets? It seems like kind of the boilerplate way that things move when these things start to happen. Privatization is very often the next step, yes?
It's already been happening, yeah. The airport was sold to a consortium from Mexico, and the toll roads, they instituted this new toll road system and actually created a big toll road in the last 5 or 10 years. And that was all outsourced to a Spanish company. And there's been some complaints from people in Puerto Rico that, the website is now, I've actually tried to pay this for my mom. On the website, sometimes the website just shuts down and you can't pay. And so then they have this electronic way of giving you a fine if you go through the toll and you haven't replenished your account. It's sort of like the systems they have in the U.S., but it's not as, the U.S. is usually more efficiently run. So that's already happened. And there's talk about forcing the university to sell a lot of the land that it owns, and even the privatization of the university, which is a big deal in Puerto Rico because the university kind of protects the national patrimony of how it views itself as a national culture. And the idea of that being privatized is very offensive to a lot of Puerto Ricans because there's a lot of national feeling in Puerto Rico, which is one of the reasons why the country doesn't unanimously vote to become a state.
Today we're talking with Ed Morales and David Dayan. We're talking about the Puerto Rican debt crisis. I'm Renee Kemp. We're sitting in today. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is your call. We have a lot of interest in the subject. I hope we can get to the calls. We're also podcasting the show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can listen to past shows and share there and find out what's coming up next. And if you have a show idea for us, by the way, we'd love to have it. 866-798-8255. Today, we're digging into the roots of Puerto Rico's fiscal crisis. The territory is $73 billion in debt. Last June, the island's governor basically said, we just can't pay it. The debt is unpayable. So what role does Washington have to play? What role does Wall Street have to play? We invite you to join us, 866-798-8255. 5. So, Ed, if you had to guess, where does it go from here? Once again, the U.S. Congress has said, well, bankruptcy should be a last resort. So it looks like that's being, if not taken off the table, certainly pushed to the back burner. And they've said they might make a decision on what's next by the end of this month, by the end of March. But if you had a crystal ball, what do you think happens next?
Well, I think that it's too much of a public relations crisis for the United States to allow the situation in Puerto Rico to deteriorate to an embarrassing level. So I think that there will probably be some sort of compromise that will happen that will be orchestrated by Congress, which will allow a kind of a limited bankruptcy without a full bankruptcy and allow the debt to be restructured and minimize the so-called haircut that the hedge funds and investors will take. Unfortunately, as many people in Puerto Rico talk about, even if there's a stabilization of the economy by the debt restructuring, there's still a huge problem about, as I've said a few times already, how do we assure that the economy can grow? How does real industry get created in Puerto Rico, and how do the profits be stipulated to be reinvested in the local economy and allow for a real, self-reproducing economy? And it's very difficult because most of the model that we have about economic growth in the whole country is based on giving tax breaks. I mean, you know, the other day I saw a commercial for New York State is doing great because, you know, you can start a company in New York and won't have to pay taxes for 10 years. And so then how do things get reinvested in the country when that is really the model for economic growth in most of the United States? So it's a very difficult problem. But I think there's a lot of political will in Puerto Rico, and I think it's a good thing that the politics is being shifted in Puerto Rico away from the status debate towards, how to really create a functioning economy and how to address a lot of the social and economic problems that have resulted from, you know, this problem that's existed practically since the U.S. took over Puerto Rico in 1898.
Okay, great. Let's take another call. This one's from Cody in San Francisco. Cody, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to go a little further into the nuances of comparison between Greece and Puerto Rico, because my understanding was that the reason why Greece was pretty much forced to take a loan from the European Central Bank in order to pay off all the Wall Street investment that had been put into Greece. And then in a similar process, in Puerto Rico, there's a lot of the debt in Puerto Rico is held by Wall Street, and now they're preventing the bankruptcy in order to keep Wall Street from losing a bunch of money through the bankruptcy process.
David?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true, yeah. I'm sorry, I'll let David talk. It's fine.
Hi, David. You with us? I think we lost you there for a sec. Welcome back.
Yeah, I think you did. But yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly the hedge funds that have either issued the debt themselves, as Ed said in the 2014 issuance, which was, the largest municipal bond issuance in history at the time, or whether they scooped it up, debt that was issued previously, they have an interest. And so does the mutual funds. I mean, you shouldn't really let them off the hook. They are interested in getting back their investment at par without taking any haircuts and you know, trying to limit losses, as well as the bond insurers who want to limit the payouts that they might have to give because they've insured all of these bonds. They want to limit the ability for Puerto Rico to give a haircut to their bondholders, and then the insurers have to make up the difference. And in a broad-based default, that would be quite exorbitant for these insurers. So they're kind of interlocking different financial institutions that all have similar goals. They're not completely aligned, but they're similarly aligned, and they're using their power outside of Puerto Rico and inside to ensure that the island pays back its debts.
Ed, did you want to weigh in?
You know, I just wanted to ask David, like, since you've done this work on the mortgage crisis, it seems like from what you were introduced by this, you wrote a book about this. I mean, what parallels do you see in this problem with the bond rating people, where they sort of falsely inflate these ratings, right, which is a similar thing that happened with the mortgage crisis?
Yeah, it's certainly the case that these bonds were issued with pretty high ratings, and even after the ratings fell, as you said, they ended up issuing some bonds. But that rating in the mortgage crisis was based on kind of fantasy, on this idea that was just trusting the issuers that the quality of the mortgages that were underlying the bonds was adequate. In this case, it seems like that adjustment in terms of the credit rating agencies was made because of the legal structures of the debt,
right,
and they certainly had the knowledge that under current law, it would be very hard to give haircuts on that debt because of the very peculiar place that Puerto Rico finds itself in legally and constitutionally.
And speaking of the Constitution, the fact that these were constitutionally guaranteed, what does that say about the full faith and credit of the Constitution of Puerto Rico, you know?
Yes, I mean, that is kind of the central problem. There is some debt that is not constitutionally obligated. There have been very minor defaults that have taken place already on a public finance corporation, other debt that doesn't have that constitutional guarantee, so there's a sort of a cross purposes between those bondholders that hold the constitutionally obligated debt and those who don't. The ones that hold the constitutionally obligated debt are perfectly happy for Puerto Rico to sacrifice the non constitutionally obligated debt as long as they get paid. And, of course, those that hold the other bonds don't want to see those bonds get haircut so that the GO bonds can get paid off. So it's kind of working at cross purposes, but mostly it's going to the same place of saying, you know, in a choice between the people, the citizens of Puerto Rico, and the bondholders, you need to take the bondholders' case every time.
And let's say even if Puerto Rico is able to write off the bad debt, how does the island go forward and generate enough revenue to just keep up basic services and get back on its feet? Where does the revenue come
from? This is the problem, because the tax base is being eroded. 10% of the island's citizens have left. The hardest thing to find in downtown San Juan or Ponce is a suitcase, because they just are sold out so completely. The erosion of the tax base and this strange way of trying to paper over this seems like the only gross strategy that the recent governments have had, is to bring in millionaires and try to get them to live on the island tax-free in the hope that they will somehow employ three people and you know, pull the island out of its misery. A tax haven strategy just seems like one of the worst ideas for bringing a country that is mired in a decade of recession back to prominence. I don't even understand the rationale. It seems like the hedge funds that are pressuring the Puerto Rican government to, pay back their debt are also the same types of forces that are pressuring the government essentially to turn it into a playground for the rich.
Right.
And it seems like, if I had a crystal ball, it looks like that's what's coming up for Puerto Rico. It just looks like there is no other option that's even being seriously considered.
Yeah.
Ed?
Yeah.
Yes. No, it's true.
There aren't even enough high-end properties to satisfy demand at this point. I mean, it really is just, you have two commonwealths. You have this one for the fabulously wealthy who get these huge tax abatements in an attempt to lure them to the island, and then you have this whole other mass of people who are seeing their services cut, basic services cut, and who are desperate to leave.
Are there any promises?
What's sad is that it was,
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. What's sad is that, yes, I mean, the growing inequality is sort of part of the model, because most of the people who are leaving are people who have some means. They're not rich people, but they have at least some means to move to Orlando, which means that maybe they have family in Orlando. They have enough money for the ticket to relocate. They can maybe sell their house, even though the value of real estate is going down. And so we might get left with the people in Puerto Rico. There are a lot of retirees. But, I mean, for those who are not elderly or a lot of elderly, I mean, you're going to get this huge mass of poorer people. And one of the plans that was suggested by the Kruger Report, which was this report that was put together by ex-IMF or current IMF people to suggest what could happen to Puerto Rico, is a lowering of the wage to keep it in line with the wages in the rest of the Caribbean. You know, one thing about the American presence in Puerto Rico was that it created these wages that are higher than most of Latin America, almost U.S. Wages. And in fact, you know, the AFL-CIO has chapters in Puerto Rico. And so one of the things that has been suggested is that the economy won't grow because the wages are too high. So, yes, we might get this huge privileged class, and then these people who are left and have no choice but to accept lower wages.
In fact, there's a law in Congress to do just that, which has the very Orwellian title of the Puerto Rico Minimum Wage Improvement.
Yikes.
Right.
Yikes.
Double think, yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, when you hear this kind of bifurcation happening, when you have the, you know, the haves and have-nots literally living side by side, separated maybe only by high walls, you start to see other kinds of issues, crime and other things. Are we starting to see those inevitable things come to pass?
Well, the funny thing is that... Go ahead,
sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, what I know that you're seeing is, and Ed alluded to this, is a talent drain. The people
right.
that can leave the island have a certain degree of professional competency, professional degrees. You're talking about doctors, you're talking about lawyers, you're talking about people with that are highly educated. Those are the kinds of people that have the means to leave the island. And so when you want to jumpstart the economy, if you're best and brightest are fleeing, seeing no opportunity, it just makes it that much harder to restore any kind of economic growth to the island.
Well, is there any way for someone of good conscience to invest in Puerto Rico? I mean, bottom line is there are people who have bonds in their portfolio, but they don't know that. But after hearing this program, they might think, is there any way to open a business there, to buy property there, to invest in good conscience, in other words?
Mm. There's a lot of potential for a green economy in Puerto Rico. You know, I mean, obviously the solar energy issue is something that can be exploited. There's constant sun in Puerto Rico, and it could be a place for different kinds of agriculture, creating products for people who want to eat healthy. There's a lot of ideas that could be implemented. I mean, there are businesses that you can do. You know, you can even do ecotourism. So those things are there. You know, I mean, one of the big things about Puerto Rico is Puerto Rico has to develop better sources of energy, because right now the electricity is so overpriced because it's all being generated through gasoline or, I'm sorry, petroleum-based measures.
Yeah,
and if there were a way to really create energy without depending on petroleum, you know, it would be a huge boost to the economy.
Yeah,
and that's the agency that's in the biggest debt, right? Yeah.
The power company derives
right.
almost all its electricity from diesel fuel. And you have trade winds and sun being perhaps the most plentiful resource on this island. And they have some of the highest electricity rates in the United States. Because it's all imported. And there's also a thing called the Jones Act, which restricts
That's right.
cargo carriage between two U.S. ports with a foreign flag ship. So any time a ship that carries U.S. bound goods, they have to stop at a U.S. port, transfer the goods to Puerto Rico on a separate U.S. ship, and then send them along, and it increases the cost of living. So you have this incredible poverty, but you also have a fairly high cost of living on the island. And those two forces just are they're not good together.
There were some implications with the power company in this whole debt crisis, yes?
Well, PREPA, the monopolized sort of national power company, has been the first to reach some sort of deal with its bondholders to take a slight haircut. That has gone through, I think that's been negotiated for well over a year, and it's required for the Puerto Rican government to come up with some legislation to facilitate it, which they have done, and then it's gone back and forth. So hopefully, the hope from some is that that will be a model.
Okay, I don't know if we lost
repeatedly.
It.
Repeatedly. Mm-hmm. You know, debt restructuring is one thing, but returning the island to economic growth is another.
Okay, we've got about 30 seconds each. Can you offer your thoughts on the way forward for the island? Let's start with you, Ed. About 30 seconds.
Right. Well, as I said, the negotiations have to the government has to figure out a way to do something with the liquidity that they're going to get through the debt restructuring, and it has to be positive. But I think there's a strong moral issue about the Puerto Rican people suffering through decisions that they didn't make.
Okay.
And that really is something that has to be addressed.
Okay, David, we're down to about 20 seconds for you.
Yeah, these are 4.5 million American citizens, and, you know, we have an obligation to them. And the fact that these hedge funds were able to come in and squeeze this island and harm these American citizens, that's something I think we all have an obligation to think about.
All right. Thank you, journalists Ed Morales and David Dayan. They've both been covering the Puerto Rican debt crisis. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your calls and your emails. Join us tomorrow. We're talking about a trade bill banning slavery in the global fishing industry. Do you know where your fish comes from? We hope you'll join us tomorrow. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.